Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is on assignment. Jane Albright is a professional engineer, formerly with the U.S. Navy Nuclear Engineering Program. And Jane wrote a series of four articles on the global flood. And we've done two interviews, and we've gone through her introduction and the vapor canopy theory and the hydroplate theory and catastrophic plate tectonics. And now I'd like to bring Jane Albright back onto the program to discuss her conclusion, and that's about the controversy. So, Jane Albright, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Bob, thanks so much for having me back. I've really enjoyed this, and I just appreciate the chance to talk to you about my work a little bit. But if you don't mind, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but before we even begin, I'd like to share something with the listeners. You called me earlier today to kind of set up our time and everything, but you were cut short, I understand, because a New York Times reporter was calling to interview you about the presidential campaign, apparently because of your longstanding opposition to abortion. So I just want to make sure that the audience knows, especially your Real Science Radio audience, that your radio program during the week goes far beyond creation apologetics and the flood. Mm. You guys there at Bob Enyart Live have done for many, many years such fantastic work fighting the culture war for families, children, unborn children, and our religious liberties. And I just wanted to say thank you and make sure that your audience knew about that.
Well, you're so welcome, Jane. And you know what? One of the real heroes in the battle to save unborn children, and very few people know this, is Peggy Brown, Dr. Walt
That's
Brown's
right.
wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, they've been a lifelong partnership. So it's Walt and Peggy. But Peggy has literally risked her own well-being, her very liberty with Operation Rescue, for example, trying to save the lives of unborn children. So I am so thrilled to know both of them. Walt Brown, the author of the hydroplate theory on the global flood, and then Peggy. Wow. So, and Jane, that's so kind of you. Thank you so very much.
Yes. Well, you're welcome. Thank you for all you do. I have met both of the Browns as well, and they're a fantastic team, but we didn't get a chance. And so I'd like to ask if you can share anything about your interview with the New York Times.
The presidential campaign with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, both hardcore pro-abortion individuals, and the Times called us because the Times hates unborn children, and in fact they hate Jesus Christ, and because children are made in God's image and likeness, therefore they're expressing their rebellion against God by their support for abortion, for dismembering children. Just like if Jesus were here today, they would, if they could, shout crucify him. And so, Jane, they know that we have zero tolerance for anyone who would support the intentional killing of even a single child. So the New York Times and so many in the media will call us to try to create dissension during campaigns, political campaigns. But people could Google, they could go to our website, kgov.com, and of course, we'll report on what comes of that interview.
I think that's a reminder to pray for Bob Enyart Live and Real Science Radio, because anybody that's on the front line fighting the enemy has got a target on their back.
Well, I think that's true. And you're welcome. So, Jane, your series of articles, we have had tremendous encouraging input. In fact, one longtime listener called and said, please, do I have to wait a week? I want to hear part two of the Jane Albright interviews. So people have enjoyed them, and all four articles are available on the global flood and something called the flood models at our website, rsr.org/Albright, rsr.org/Albright, A-L-B-R-I-G-H-T. And so I encourage people to read those, and then right there, they can also listen to our interviews. And today we're concluding with part four of your series, which deals with the controversy. So before we get there, could you recap for us what have we covered so far?
Sure. Well, in our interviews, we looked briefly at the biblical account of Noah's flood and the vapor canopy theory. Mm-hmm. Then we briefly discussed the hydroplate theory, a theory that's consistent with the Bible and relies on the laws of science without extra-biblical miracles to solve problems, and also explains many features of our Earth's geography and the solar system. And uniquely, I think, it's a theory that has successfully predicted many later discoveries on Earth and in space.
Yeah, a lot of predictions have come from Dr. Walt Brown and the hydroplate theory. And we have been talking about them for years on Real Science Radio.
That's right.
And some major discovery will come out, Comet 67P or whatever. Human beings land a craft on a comet. And here is Walt Brown's theory yet again being affirmed in his predictions,
with findings that just totally astounds the astronomers.
Yeah, right.
Well, then we talked briefly about catastrophic plate tectonics, a very popular theory that's built upon the secular uniformitarian plate tectonics theory. Mm-hmm. We talked about how it relies on multiple miracles not mentioned in the Bible in order to work.
Yep.
And really, it's not consistent with the Bible. It does not mesh very well with the biblical account.
Jane, we have two spreadsheets that are Google Docs. And from our website, we link to them, in fact, from rsr.org/Albright. And one has a list of the biblical material that uniquely supports various flood models. And the other is the flood models and features of the Earth and the solar system that perhaps they might be able to explain. What's astounding about these is that the biblical material, like Bible verses that might uniquely support, say, catastrophic plate tectonics, the column for CPT does not have a single check mark. In other words, there's not a single statement in the Bible that seems to uniquely support that model based on the secular plate tectonics model. The vapor,
that's very compelling. That's the number one problem I have with CPT.
With CPT. It's not overtly biblical. It's only biblical in that it claims that there was a global flood, and that's it. The vapor canopy theory has two check marks, and one being the windows of heaven were opened. So if there's a vapor canopy and the water came down, okay. The hydroplate theory has about 20 check marks. There is so much in the Bible that is so explicitly affirmed by the hydroplate theory. And so I strongly encourage people to go to rsr.org/Albright and click on these two spreadsheets. And you'll see for yourself, and you could recommend modifications because these are works in progress. We could update these, especially if you find an error. The second one is the physical features requiring an explanation, and the vapor canopy theory, virtually nothing. Catastrophic plate tectonics, very little. The hydroplate theory explains so many stunning, unexpected, and difficult to explain features of the Earth and the solar system.
So then I have a question, Bob.
Yeah.
What I found out, I think probably you would affirm this, is that the major creation science organizations, they do not affirm the HPT, and some of them quite strongly oppose it. Uncovered evidence, and it's there for others to see too, where they've actually discouraged other people who come to them with questions about the HPT. Is it a good theory or not? They've discouraged them from investigating it.
Yeah.
And in fact, this came out of my interviews either as well, that some have falsely accused Dr. Brown of threatening to sue ICRs. So
yeah,
it's troubling. And with all those check marks in the HPT column and very few in the other two columns, still, it seems that most of them promote CPT, despite its many scientific problems and lack of biblical support.
Yeah, and in the part where they falsely accuse Dr. Brown of threatening to sue Henry Morris, basically,
right,
is something that's been going on for 30 years and continues to this very day.
People told me during my interviews that Dr. Brown threatened to sue ICR Henry Morris. And when I challenged them on that, they were not willing to get on the phone with Dr. Brown and me,
yeah.
nor were they willing to produce the evidence that they say they had that
yeah,
proved
right.
that was a true
yeah,
fact.
I have written evidence, which they don't because it never happened. But before we're done with this interview, Jane, let's name at least a couple of the leaders who have, for many years, bearing false witness against Walt Brown, saying that he's threatened to sue Henry Morris. Let's name those names, not to cause drama, but in hopes of reconciliation, at least on that point. Because if they issue a public retraction, in your article, it says that you've arranged for that to be published online at rsr.org/retraction.
At least two people told me during my interviews they spread that gossip. I will say that before I published this article, I sent this to them and many others and gave them an opportunity to respond, correct, retract, and I got zero response on that other than one person just said, oh, yeah, that's really a sad situation. So, and that standing offer to make corrections is out there, and I will incorporate those changes to make it more accurate.
That'd be great. And Jane, you have written that all of the scientists and leaders who you interviewed for the 16 agreed that there was harmful division in the creation research community over this issue. And all but one agreed also that they hoped it could be resolved. So it seems yeah. like, you know, that's encouraging. If people hope it could be resolved, perhaps it can be.
I think people really do. I really want to be. And that, I did find that encouraging. And I guess it was surprising and not surprising that so many people that I talked to were very much aware of this tension, this friction.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So then your article goes into the history. And here it's interesting because you quote someone named Bob Enyart.
Yes, I did.
So, Jane, go ahead. Please explain that part.
Well, in your great video on the global flood and the hydroplate theory, you talked about how years ago, Dr. Brown, when he would be asked during his seminars, he was giving creation seminars all over the country, and inevitably people would ask about the vapor canopy theory.
Mm-hmm.
And he would give factual answers to their questions and explain why it was not scientifically viable. He says that, you know, when people would ask these questions and then he'd explain to them what the problems, they would just get these crestfallen expressions on their face. Mm. And he knew that people were then going back to ICR and asking questions about that.
Yeah, like, why is Walt off the reservation? Why isn't he supporting the party line?
Right. And I think that helped or maybe even initiated some of the polarization, the division there.
Well,
that
absolutely. One example of an argument against the vapor canopy theory is that the Bible begins with the fountains of the great deep. And yes, it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. And that's almost certainly because the fountains shut up with such tremendous force that the waters fell back down from the upper atmosphere, back down as torrential rain all over the earth from the fountains. But then it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, but then the waters continued to rise for another 110 days. So if it stopped raining after 40 days and 40 nights and the water still is rising, that shows that the primary source for the water doesn't come from a vapor canopy theory. It's coming from the fountains of the great deep.
Correct. However, to say anything negative about the vapor canopy theory at that time, you really put yourself out there. And perhaps some people really even saw it as an attack on the Venerable Morris himself.
Yeah, Henry Morris.
And like you said in the video, Bob, you know, even though they now all agree with him that the vapor canopy theory is not scientific or biblical, at that time, that was a pretty controversial thing to do, is to go out there with that.
It was like heresy, and once the relationships are broken, it's very difficult to heal them.
So, and then word started spreading, apparently, that Brown opposed the vapor canopy theory, and things, dominoes started falling at that point.
Walt Brown was working with Henry Morris in ICR, the Midwest Center, and then Henry Morris asked Walt to set up his own creation organization. And that was a very sad time. And in our video, we let people read from Henry Morris's own book, The History of Modern Creationism, that he included a negative description of Dr. Walt Brown's leadership. And that was really sad. Now, thankfully, in the second edition, Henry Morris omitted that negative section.
Correct, because they had a conversation, and Brown told me, you know, quoting from my article, unfortunately, Henry Morris did not first check the facts with me. And then when he learned how incorrect the piece was, he removed it from the second edition. But the damage was done, and people started canceling their reservations for his seminars, and
Walt
his income
sort of
dried up.
Yeah, he sort of became a fringe creation scientist because of his opposition to the vapor canopy theory. And then Henry Morris, who's beloved by everyone, writes this negative thing about Walt, and it's based on, as we can piece together, that was based on a comment from one individual, and it was an individual who was trying to become a board member on Walt Brown's new organization, and he wasn't accepted as a board member. And so, at any rate,
it appears as though he was acting out of sort of in a retaliatory,
like disgruntled.
You know.
And so then later, and we showed this in our video, Henry Morris went out of his way to compliment Walt Brown in public settings, in very significant public settings, like at historic moments. He would talk about the major creation leaders and the influence around the country and the world, and he would include Dr. Walt Brown. So that early negative comment by Henry Morris about Walt Brown was then removed. And it seems like he would go out of his way to let people know that Walt is doing valuable work.
Correct. And that was encouraging. Of course, that was some years later.
Yeah.
Right. But unfortunately, you know, the repercussions continue to this day, and seem that kind of fall into disfavor seems to have opened the door for additional, more severe criticism and opposition from others with competing flood models.
Mm. Yeah, because here you are 30 years later and you have natural competitors, right? Ideas, it's not unlike McDonald's and Burger King. You know, they're competitors. And so if you are a scientist, you're a competitor. You want people to read your articles and buy your books. So the same thing is true in the creation movement and the creation scientists who have another theory to promote. The catastrophic plate tectonics, they sort of have this advantage in that the movement was predisposed against Walt Brown and against his hydroplate theory. By the way, Jane, I'd like to let the audience know, if we've piqued their interest in our global flood video, they can get it at our website, rsr.org/flood, and they could either get a DVD, a Blu-ray, they could download HD quality, or they could stream it. So there's four ways to watch the video, and we even have excerpts freely available at our YouTube channel. Just rsr.org and click on YouTube at the top of the screen.
But they should get the whole thing. It's excellent. Yeah, it's very comprehensive, and I love the Bible teaching and just cover a lot of territory. It was very helpful in getting ready to take on this project.
Well, thank you. And let me announce that our next science video has now been completed. It's gone off to be mastered on DVD and Blu-ray, and it is Real Science Radio's Evidence Against the Big Bang. And we are so excited about it. I got to do a screening of it up in British Columbia a couple weeks ago, and what a tremendous reception it received. We'll see if as many people enjoy this Evidence Against the Big Bang as have enjoyed our hydroplate theory video.
I've seen snippets of it, and I know they will.
Oh, thank you, Jane. So then you go on to an appeal to authority, and you say something in the section that I really admired. And you're talking about some of the opposition to the hydroplate theory, some of their argument, is reasonable, but then you go on to make an important point. So could we talk about appealing to authority?
Sure. One thing I heard over and over again, especially perhaps from some of the senior leaders in organizations that may not be practicing scientists or geologists themselves, but they say, look, I can't support the HBT because I don't know of any creation geologist that supports it. You know, none of these people support the HBT. Mm-hmm. And they sort of use that as a basis for not even looking at it at all. And I found that very interesting because that's not any different from somebody, in my mind, it's not any different from an atheist or an evolutionist saying, you know, I'm not going to look at the arguments or the case for creation because all the scientists believe in evolution. So that's what you call an appeal to authority. You know, it's one thing to argue against the HBT because some creation geologists oppose it. That's a reasonable thing to do if your arguments are also informed. But just to dismiss it, especially, and to tell other people not to bother looking at it, because creation geologists who hold to other theories, like you said, they're competing scientists. Mm-hmm. That's called the logical fallacy of an appeal to authority.
So, okay to use it as an argument against that most creation geologists support CPT instead of HBT, but it is not valid to use it as an argument to dismiss it.
Correct.
You quote from one of my favorite scientists, and he is a brilliant man with CMI. Now, our favorite scientists for Fred Williams and Bob Inyart here at Real Science Radio, our favorite scientist is the modern Isaac Newton, Walt Brown. And we've said that many times over. But one of our favorite scientists is incredibly brilliant, Dr. Jonathan Sarfati. And you quote from him in an article published by CMI, Creation Ministries International, and he says something that you say is false on its face.
This really struck me. I did contact him for an interview, and he referred me to this article. So I read it, and it's a brief synopsis summary of the various flood models out there. And this is what he says in this article about the HPT. First of all, he talks about the biblical strengths of it. You know, he specifically alludes to how compatible it is with scripture. But then he says, yet it has failed to attract the support of many creation geologists and geophysicists, many of whom who have no reason to reject a successful flood model. That astounded me. It's like, yes, it's consistent with scripture, but other men with competing theories don't support it.
Right. And when Dr. Sarfati says they would have no reason to reject a successful flood model. Well, of course, scientists through the history of science are just as competitive as any other competitors.
Even in the creation science community.
Of course. And the more important something is, the more competitive people become. Even within the, say, the pro-life arena with competing pro-life strategies. But to be accepted in the geologist circles in the creation movement, you can't support Walt's model. You can't do that. So they have plenty of reason to reject Walt's model right from the get-go.
And however, let me just interject. I talked to several of these creation geologists, and not a single one that I talked to had actually even read it.
So they have not read the hydroplate theory.
And when they try to talk about it, it's obvious that they do not understand or know the fundamentals of the theory. They're basing everything they say on secondhand, thirdhand.
Right. Descriptions of the theory. And I would like to add, Dr. Sarfati's article does go on to make some specific criticisms of the hydroplate theory. And we have a series going on that our previous program was a part of. And that's our RSR's list of answers to hydroplate theory objections. So Lord willing, as we go on, we'll take on more and more of the particular specific scientific objections. But I'd like to make an observation about this claim at a bird's eye view, Jane, that creation geologists don't support the hydroplate theory. I have a couple observations about that. First of all, it's not an enormous universe. Like, how many creation geologists are there, right? And
right.
I think of the ones who support CPT, and they're well known to Fred Williams and I, names like Andrew Snelling, John Baumgartner, Timothy Clary, beautiful guy, wonderful Christian brother, Steve Austin, Kurt Wise, Larry Vardaman, although maybe he's more like a meteorologist, maybe. So maybe a half a dozen that at least I could name off when I was jotting down notes, who I could name off the top of my head. And then there are other creation geologists like Michael Ord and Phil Budd, but they don't support CPT. So you sort of can't count them on the pro-CPT because geologists don't support Walt Brown. If you're going to count these people, you'd have to deduct geologists like them from the support.
I will point out that Mike Ord is a meteorologist. I'm glad you mentioned those names. Both of them have their own theories.
Thank you for clarifying that about Mike. I sure think of Mike as a geologist.
He's well-read. Yeah. He knows a lot about geology.
Well, and he's written
so much. He actually has a master's in meteorology, I believe.
All right. Well, thank you for that clarification. But then there are engineers and scientists who support Walt's theory. And granted, there are not a lot of creation geologists that I know offhand. But I do know, for example, there is a geology professor, Doug Block. So you could look him up online. We'll link to him. But then there's a tenured geology professor at a world-class university. He's a professor of geophysics. And even though he's tenured, I can't give his name. Walt has never mentioned him publicly. But he has rejected plate tectonics, and he has now become a supporter of the hydroplate theory. And perhaps soon we'll be able to let people know his name, but he needs to be the one to come out of the closet. We can't out him, you know, because of his career and all.
Yeah, and when you subscribe to creation science or some of these other theories, like the hydroplate theory, you are putting your profession on the line.
Well, yeah, of course. And, you know, there's Dr. Joshua Spencer, who I've interviewed, who's got a PhD in nuclear engineering, who supports the hydroplate theory. There is another scientist who I will not name, but he has published this year, 2016, in a related field to the hydroplate theory. He's published in one of the world's most prestigious mainstream science journals. And his article is basically supportive of the hydroplate theory, although he doesn't come out and say that. But all his data and conclusions are directly supportive of the hydroplate theory. So there, in fact, there's a NASA shuttle pilot. Well, now the shuttle has been mothballed. But one of the pilots of one of the last missions to the International Space Station, Jane, I was at Walt and Peggy's home with our boys. You know, they're swimming in their backyard pool. It's like 110 degrees out in Phoenix.
This is Phoenix.
And Walt shows me, hanging on his wall in his den, a photograph from inside the International Space Station. And there's the portal, and there's the Earth in the background, and a NASA astronaut. And floating right in front of him is Dr. Walt Brown's In the Beginning, floating in zero gravity. And he brought it
That's
with
amazing.
Him. Yeah. He brought it with him to the space station. Now, he's smart, right? Every ounce counts on a liftoff. And so he didn't bring the book. He brought it on CD, which you can get from Walt. But there are so many scientists on the cutting edge, and engineers who have helped Walt improve his theory over the last 30 years. That's exciting to me. And I know because for many years I've interacted with these scientists on the air and off the air.
That's a key point. And like you said, Dr. Brown has many relationships with other scientists and engineers.
Well, right. Including, for example, you know, scientists who are world famous as old Earth evolutionists and geologists. One of the fathers of plate tectonics who coined the term seafloor spreading. You recall that, Jane?
Yes, Dr. Bob Dietz. He's passed away now, but he was one of the pioneers of the current version of plate tectonics. Yeah, so Dr. Brown has enjoyed professional relationships with many, many, so I'm really glad you brought that up. There is a relatively small, you're right, it's a relatively small community of well-known geologists within the creation science that sort of comprise the majority of the, but these are also the people that the heads of these organizations listen to and are often contacted and are talking to other people and that are interested in creation science.
So, Jane, now if we could, following the outline of your concluding article, your fourth article on the controversy, to talk about when you challenge an established paradigm, because that's what's going on here with Walt's hydroplate theory, which I also call the theory of the fountains of the Great Deep, because it's where did the water come from? If the water for the global flood came from below the crust, then it's a settled issue, and all the other models are false, and Walt Brown's hydroplate theory is correct. So
it's the closest one. Correct.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I was so perplexed because it's so logical, both biblically consistent and scientifically logical, and yet people I were talking to wouldn't even just give it the time of day. It was obvious they didn't know that much about it, but they didn't support it, and I was so confused. And then I read a book that opened my eyes, and it's a book that's been around for a long, long time. It's called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions by Thomas Kuhn, and it just explained, it could have been describing the current situation in the creation science community
because
around the hydroplate theory.
When you challenge an established paradigm, the pushback is enormous.
Is enormous.
Because you're talking about people's careers. Like John Baumgartner, his career is based on plate tectonics. And in fact, all these geologists you point out in your article, they've spent their entire professional career, including all their years of higher education, learning about plate tectonics.
And that's how they view the world.
Right. And so if you have a theory that says plate tectonics doesn't describe Earth's history, it is the fountains of the Great Deep with the water coming up from below the crust, by definition, it rejects plate tectonics, seafloor spreading, and subduction. And so then there is this natural resistance, because if the fountains of the Great Deep explain the flood, then my education, my writing, my theories, many of my videos and books, they're really off the mark.
Correct. And my whole world is turned upside down. How do you redefine your world in terms of something that is totally different from what you've been trained in? It's a very difficult thing. But when you think, when you review the history of the development of scientific theories over the years, that's what happens. You have a paradigm that everybody subscribes to, but there's problems, right? And the problems begin to multiply, and you explain them away, and you try to reconcile them. Eventually, somebody will come along with a totally new explanation, and that person will be opposed. It happens every time.
So creation science is a major paradigm shift from secular science, and it answers so many questions. In fact, it's exhilarating to study it, as Fred Williams and I have found out over many years of broadcast. Well, then when you fine-tune that paradigm shift and you look at flood models, it turns out that so much more is now understood when you unlock the mystery with the fountains of the Great Deep. And let's consider one example, the fossils that are buried in sediments. So there are questions like, where did all the sediments come from? And where did the cementing agents come from? And why are there fossils of sea life on top of all the major mountain ranges? And Jane, these questions have answers not in secular geology and not in the CPT, but in the hydroplate theory.
The hydroplate theory best explains all of those, including the cementing agents. You know, where did that come from? How did things get buried so rapidly? Why is there horizontal layering all over the earth? And then we see these layers in parts of the earth where they're actually wavy, buckled, offset. How did that happen?
Jane,
HPT explains that.
The sediments themselves, Dr. John Baumgartner has admitted that with all the forces on the earth, you cannot explain where 1 mile deep of sediments originated on the continents. That's a mile deep of limestone and sandstone. And, you know, every strata that you see in the Grand Canyon, from the bottom to the rim, where did all that come from? And the reason the other flood models can't explain it is that as soon as you start to erode the rock of the crust of the earth with a global flood, those sediments fall out of suspension in the floodwaters, and then they blanket the floor of the earth, the bottom of the floodwaters. You can't erode more rock. Because
you can't erode any. You can't erode underneath that. Right.
Right, because it's protected. That's why riverbeds don't forever burrow deeper and deeper and deeper, because the sediments that have fallen out of suspension are insulating, they're protecting the bottom of the riverbed. And so it turns out that only if the water is coming from below the crust, only if the fountains of the great deep are bringing water up from a subterranean chamber, and as that water is coming up with tremendous force, it is eroding the crack in the crust of the earth called the mid-oceanic ridge. As it's eroding that crack, it's bringing the sediments with it. That's why for 150 days, continually, more and more sediments are being deposited on the surface of the earth from the fountains of the great deep. Jane, could we now go on to your section in the article on slander and gossip?
Yes, this was hard to write. It was harder to hear, because I will say that, you know, first of all, when I talked to people, I was very upfront that I was writing an article for publication, and I was upfront that I was a hydroplate theory advocate. And, you know, but people, even though they may not support the HPT, they were very eager to talk and very cordial and engaging. I had great conversations. But there were more than a few that ended up telling me, communicating, well, so-and-so, and a lot of people told me, Dr. Baumgartner says, Walt is a nasty person. You know, he can't be trusted. Mm. And in fact, Dr. Baumgartner wrote me, I'll quote here, from the nasty interactions that Brown had with ICR in the 90s, including threats of lawsuits.
Wow.
Walt seems to have a very short fuse with people who cross him. I personally have no desire to deal with such nastiness.
Mm. Jane, that's a bit mild because, you know, I've talked with John in person, face to face, by phone at length, and I've heard him tell, you know, groups of people gathered around him after he would speak these same things. If a conversation about Walt begins, and if it doesn't right away go in the direction of Walt's theory is wrong, then the heavy artillery comes out, and it's that Walt is a charlatan, Walt threatens to sue Christians, Henry Morris, and Walt is, you know, a mean person. And so,
and a deceiver and a fraud.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are things that I've read that he has published. So I responded and I challenged him what he was talking about on this lawsuit issue, like I always did when it came up. And I shared with him the actual history. I told him where he could go read all the documentation for himself. And he replied back and said, well, I admit my understanding of the interactions between Walt Brown and ICR was all based on secondhand sources on my part.
Jane, I have explained this to John 3 years ago, and I think maybe again 2 years ago by phone. But, you know, I know from myself, I'm 57 years old. People tell me things and I forget. And when something is in your mind from 30 years ago, some gossip, slander against the competitor, it's really hard to dislodge it, and a public apology would dislodge it. That's what would cause these leaders to remember that they have been slandering Walt. You name another creation leader.
Right. I talked to the president of Creation Research Society, Dr. Don DeYoung, and he pretty much said the same thing to me. You may be aware that there have been lawsuits between Walt Brown and ICR saying that they've stolen each other's ideas. Now, he's careful in his wording there, but it leaves you with the impression, does it not, that Dr. Brown has been threatening to sue ICR, not the other way around. I was shocked, but I took a deep breath and I respectfully challenged him on that. He said, well, I have documentation that shows that it's true. And I says, would you produce it? And he declined to do so. I says, would you get on the phone with me and Dr. Brown? Would you look at the documentation that's available? And he just, from that moment, he just kind of stopped communicating with me. He was not willing. He was willing to talk this way behind Dr. Brown's back to somebody who was writing an article for publication, but he was not willing to get on the phone with Dr. Brown and talk about what he had been saying and find out the truth. I was flabbergasted that somebody at that level would behave that way.
Well, this is what's been going on for 30 years against Walt Brown. But Jane, not too long ago, I invited Dr. Don DeYoung to speak at our church. I pastor Denver Bible Church, and he and his beautiful wife, they came, they spent a wonderful morning. He's a fabulous speaker at Grace College in Northern Indiana. He has a tremendous influence, and I love him, respect him. I'm thrilled for the work he's done, but this is an area where there is a plank in his eye.
But it's a very, very serious issue. When people at this level are saying things like that, it has an effect. It has an effect.
Oh, of course.
Right, exactly. You know, as I would just refer to one scripture I was reading in the course of this, the section in James, of course, which talks about the tongue. After James talks about how we bless our Lord and Father on one side of our mouth, and then we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God, from the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be. But the next verse really struck me, Bob. It says, does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Mm. And it struck me that's not just a rhetorical question. Well, I think that's a warning.
Well, sure it is. Now, the harm has not only been to Walt Brown, because of course it's affected his, well, he doesn't do his seminars any longer, and they were tremendously successful. I mean, he'd have 400 people would be a small seminar. He had tremendous seminars. Well, from 1981 to 1999, he conducted about 200 seminars, more in the earlier years, I believe. But then it's also harmed the creation movement, because to the extent that it is true that the fountains of the great deep are the key to the flood mechanism, and that the water came from below the crust, this slander, this do not bear false witness against your neighbor, I mean, it's violating one of the Ten Commandments, this has harmed the progress of the entire creation movement being able to understand not only the flood, but the crust of the earth and the trenches in the Pacific and a dozen major features of the earth's surface, including mountain plateaus, for example, and the fact that the moon is beat to a pulp, especially the near side, and the asteroids, meteoroids, and comets. So much of our scarred creation is explained by the fountains of the great deep and the debris ejected with tremendous energy. And so the creation movement has lost the knowledge of all of that and has gone down repeated dead ends, like the vapor canopy theory and now CPT, because of this early resentment for Walt having the insight to say, you know, guys, we're going in the wrong direction. We got to reject this vapor canopy theory.
And then key people resorting to slander instead of dealing with conflicts and misunderstandings in the way that the Bible prescribes. I think that the creation science has really suffered. I couldn't agree more. I think the creation community at large has been done a disservice. And I'm not so sure that it hasn't just really contributed to what some are seeing as just a decline in interest in creation science in general.
Well, it's got to be a part of that. But Jane, for people who are curious about the potential insights gained by the hydroplate theory, I have one page I recommend that they go to, rsr.org/predictions. Our webpage lists the predictions of the creation science movement, and then especially the extraordinary confirmed predictions of Dr. Walt Brown and the hydroplate theory, and that is in complete contrast with those who promoted the vapor canopy and catastrophic plate tectonics. This is an extraordinary accomplishment for a scientific theory to make astounding counterintuitive predictions where one after another in many different disciplines are being confirmed. That's why at Real Science Radio, we say all scientists work for Walt Brown.
I'm glad you mentioned that because that's a fascinating page. And of course, there's also in Walt's online book, but that one page just captures that in a way that's really exciting to view. And, you know, with even one leader, I brought up the issue of predictions and it kind of just dismissed that too. Well, were those predictions, you know, how fundamental they are? It's like he really didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, salt water on Mars, comets like 67P being formed by millions of rounded boulders. You don't get rounded boulders in space. But if the debris was ejected from beneath the crust, and as that water is gushing up and parts of the crust are breaking off, and it's coming up through 60 miles of the crust being eroded away, and some of it reaches escape velocity and leaves Earth's gravity, then over the ensuing months and years and decades, that stuff coalesces because of its mutual gravitational attraction, and it becomes these weird-shaped comets.
Right, and conventional astronomy cannot understand how that could have happened. You know, they envision collisions, but, you know, under those kind of conditions, a collision would just shatter the bodies.
Right.
So it's a mystery. There's no other explanation that I know of that can explain the kind of things that they're finding on comets.
And the European Space Agency, I mean, they called these things dinosaur eggs. And they were stunned to be able to publish photos. You could see hundreds, if not thousands, of rounded boulders making up a comet. That doesn't happen in space.
It does not happen in space. And it's certainly not consistent with any explanation for comet formation.
Other than the hydroplate theory.
And it was predicted before those findings that that's what they would find.
Yes. So, Jane, could we talk about the source of the claim that Walt Brown sued Henry Morris or threatened to sue Henry Morris? It comes in both forms.
Right. Well, it appears to have begun in 1989. In the fifth edition of his book, In the Beginning, Walt published an explanation for the formation of the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, brilliant, by the way. Brilliant.
It's brilliant and it's logical. And like you said, it just explains everything. Well, there was a creation geologist with the ICR. He read that. And then shortly after that, he started publishing this explanation as his own. Well, word got back to Dr. Brown, and he ignored that for many, many years. He just thought, well, it's best to not respond to that. But then he had a colleague that was engaged in a very high-cost creation activity, and it was a very costly project, and he was concerned that, you know, in fact, this other person then started saying Dr. Brown plagiarized his work.
So, Jane, let me summarize that again so that I understand it. And I think I do because I've read the entire historical record of everything that happened back then. And by the way, if somebody today Googles origin of the Grand Canyon, guess which website is number one? Ranked number one, Dr. Walt Brown's website, creationscience.com. I mean, he beats Wikipedia, he beats the National Park Service, he beats everybody. And that's out of 750,000 relevant web pages. So when Walt published his understanding of the origin of the Grand Canyon, it was read by a creation geologist who then began to publish the same solution, but didn't credit Walt, published it as his own theory. And Walt heard about this, and he let it go for a few years. But then it was getting back to Walt from a number of people that Walt had plagiarized this other geologist's work. And then that was causing real difficulties for Walt's continued work and for other projects. So that's when Walt contacted ICR and asked for binding Christian arbitration, which is exactly the right thing to do.
Correct. And it's not a lawsuit.
No, it's binding Christian arbitration, which is a service provided all over the country by Christians who that's what they do for a living. Many of them are attorneys. And that was agreed to. And I don't think this is in your article, but right before the arbitration, ICR backed out and they said that they would agree to Christian arbitration, but not binding arbitration. Walt was very discouraged, but thought, what could he do? And he went ahead anyway, which was the right thing to do again.
Correct.
And so then what?
So, well, they did reach an agreement, and it was probably mostly successful, but at least in one area, that geologist subsequently broke that mediation agreement.
So the agreement that was reached was in Walt's favor.
Correct.
Yes. And correct. So there was the Christian arbitrator made his ruling, and this was with, Henry Morris and Walt Brown and others involved. And the agreement was, like you said, mostly adhered to, but later, in a real fundamental way, it was violated.
Correct.
And the arbitrator said, well, I'm not a judge. I don't work for the government. I don't have any authority. There's nothing I could do. And then Walt just let it go.
Correct.
And if anyone reads your article, they could get the link to all the historical details.
Right. Dr. Brown did have to, he was being asked so many questions about it. He finally did, make the story available so that people could read it and come to their own conclusions.
So then you point out in your article that if Dr. John Baumgartner or Dr. Don DeYoung, if they will publish a retraction of their false allegation, then you would have that published online at our website. And we could give the audience the URL.
And yes, that's correct, Bob. And they can do that. You've offered to do that. The website that they could do that at is rsr.org/retractions. Hmm. And if that were to happen, I would consider this project a success on that basis alone.
That would be super. So then, Jane, the issue of peer review. So you hear that Walt Brown sued ICR. He sued Henry Morris. You hear that he refuses to submit his hydroplate theory to peer review, in other words, to have it published in a creation journal. And there's something to that because it hasn't been published in a creation journal, maybe little pieces here and there. But the hydroplate theory is hundreds of pages long. And I've published in the Creation Research Society Quarterly, I submitted a review of the biotic message by Dr. Walter Remine recently, and they rejected it. In part, they said it was too long. And that's just a review of a book. So Walt's theory, to be able to boil it down to an article, of course, then you could do a series of articles, but you're talking about, without exaggerating, years of your life, time spent redesigning your presentation of your theory and then presenting it to journals where the editorial board, they're on record for 30 years opposing your model.
Correct. And then when and if it does get published, it's available to a really pretty small audience. And that's basically what Dr. Brown has shared with me, is that it would just be too difficult to take a comprehensive theory, try to condense it into 3 to 5 pages. There's a long timeline to get things published. It's then available, usually at cost, to a pretty small audience. And a summary like that would raise more questions than answers. It would just be more confusing to people than not. So his approach is, I can make the entire thing available to whoever wants to read it for free on my website. So this was a kind of an interesting little rabbit trail for me to start looking in at peer review. And it sounds like it's a very valid objection. You know, Dr. Brown won't allow peers to review his work. And therefore, because he self-publishes, it's not necessarily scientifically vetted like our work is. And I come to the conclusion that that's not at all true. Peer review is not as pristine as perhaps those outside the field would really think that it is.
Well, of course not. And the whole industry, I mean, the retractions of papers, it's become an epidemic. The retractions of papers in mainstream science journals, those journals are extremely biased against young earth creationists, and creationist journals don't like the hydroplate theory. So it is a difficult situation. Jane, I've just, as you were explaining that to us, and you pointed out how many people read all this because it's online, I've been Googling the origin of, and Walt Brown's website is number one out of typically hundreds of thousands or even millions of websites for origin of the Grand Canyon. Then do another Google, origin of ocean trenches. Walt is number one. Origin of Earth's radioactivity. Walt is number one. Origin of comets. Walt Brown's hydroplate theory is number one. Origin of asteroids, number one. Origin of meteoroids, number one. Origin of trans-Neptunian objects, number one out of 150,000 relevant pages. So Walt's work has reached the world, even though it has not had the support of the major creation ministries other than his own, because his is a major creation ministry, as Dr. Henry Morris pointed out near the end of his career.
Correct. Just a couple more points, if I could, make yes. about peer review. There's lots of articles out there. I think in my article, I reference one article in Nature. There's an article that just was published in the journal Nature called Make Peer Review Scientific. And it points out how flawed the peer review process is. It's not good at identifying errors. It's not good at identifying fraud. It is highly biased. And, you know, consider that one reason it's not good at identifying errors is because the original data is not available to people reviewing an article. So that made me think, you know, of course, Dr. Baumgartner has published many papers on CPT, but how many of the peer reviewers actually reviewed his code, for example?
Oh, right. Well, sure. Exactly. Jane, I don't know if the article in Nature you were referring to is from October 2015, but Fred Williams and I have gone over this article. It's titled How Scientists Fool Themselves and How They Can Stop. And it's really interesting that even the journal Nature admits that scientists tell these just-so stories. They're storytellers, and it gets by peer review. And storytelling is especially true in cosmology and geology, especially problematic. And those are two of the areas on the Earth and the solar system where the hydroplate theory shines.
Correct. And I'm familiar with the article that you referred to. They also published this article that I'm referring to in July of 2016.
Okay, wow. All right.
And it also is by Drummond Rennie, who's a physician, has been very active in improving standards for peer review in the medical field. And he says there's a long way to go.
Wow.
But if you just think about peer review within the creation science community, it's touted as the answer for making sure what's put out to the public is scientific. And yet, if you just stop and think about it, they publish things that conflict with each other. For
right.
years, they published pro-VCT articles. So it's not the guarantee that some people make it out to be,
no.
that if you publish in our journal, it's good. And if you don't play the rules by the way we define them, it's suspect. That's
so,
just not true.
Jane, where do we go to from here? thank you for your work, a year and a half project, interviewing. You sent requests to 32 creation scientists and leaders. Half of them responded, and you transcribed the interviews. And before you began to write your article, you sent the transcripts back to the interview subjects, gave them the opportunity to correct, to add, to clarify, and then you did your work. You wrote these four fabulous articles. What a series. Thank you for doing this. It's called Noah's Flood, The Bible, The Science, and The Controversy. They're all listed online. People could read them online or print them out. They're at rsr.org/Albright. And so, Jane, where do we go from here?
Well, Bob, as I was reflecting all this at the conclusion of my project, I felt like I needed to come up with some recommendations to improve the situation, right? You don't want to just talk about problems, you come up with solutions. And, you know, I couldn't think of a single thing. And then I realized that everything had already been written in God's Word. So I went to God's Word and I says, what are the promises that God makes to us to deal with our life's problems? And one thing that I just realized is that we have all of God's abundant grace and wisdom available to us if we seek it to help resolve these conflicts and misunderstandings. So I just did some searching through the scriptures and I reflected and prayed. I come up with a number of challenges with scriptural basis to both creation researchers,
Jane,
and to the Church of Jesus Christ.
The list of suggestions you give to creation researchers, with each one followed by scripture passages, is first, ask God how you as an individual or a leader in your organization can help bring about restored trust and mutual respect. Then you say, if you have an issue with another person or his theory, go directly to that person first. Wouldn't that be fabulous?
Right. Instead of just saying things about it to others, make sure your understanding is right, or go to them and say, I have a problem with this. And there's just a lot of misunderstanding that's been spread because we're not doing what the Bible tells us we're supposed to do.
When you disagree with another researcher, do your due diligence to ensure you understand their position. Jane, in a few weeks, I might be traveling halfway around the world with a leading creation scientist. 3 years ago, I was traveling with him. In fact, we unearthed human footprints in sandstone, Pennsylvanian sandstone, 250 million years old. We got the photos. We haven't published it yet. It's just brilliant. On that trip, he told me an objection to Walt Brown's theory that was absurd and false. Walt Brown never had made such a claim. So we went back, Kevin Lee helped me. We researched every edition of Walt's book from the first, second, third, fourth, through the eighth printed and the ninth. Walt never made such a claim. I went back to that scientist. To his credit, he apologized. He said he was misinformed and he will not repeat that false accusation. And we covered that in detail on our list of answers to hydroplate theory objections. But so when you disagree with someone, first make sure that you accurately are representing them, for starters.
Correct. Bob, I just want to be clear here. I'm not proposing that I think everybody should get on the HPT bandwagon or that there's anything wrong with disagreeing. You know, these are all things normal. Disagreements, debate, that's how science advances. But there's a way to do it. And that's where I think that we could do a better job.
Well, that's super. And when you disagree and you're going to publish an article against another researcher, send him your paper, your draft, so that, assuming you've made mistakes, he's the one person who's going to catch him if you have made mistakes.
Very important, because some things that have been published have misrepresented the theory. And I'll just restate again that I'm going to give everybody that I talk to an opportunity to review the interviews if they wish and the article, and I will correct anything that's inaccurate.
Well, that's super. And then finally, to creation researchers, you say we should disagree and debate the science without personal attacks. We should not gossip. We should challenge others when they gossip and know that your labor is not in vain. So that's all super. You have a special challenge to ICR, Henry Morris's group, that they have a special obligation to make sure that the Christian community knows that the leading creation organizations no longer support vapor canopy theory. Brian Thomas recently with ICR wrote a great article to that effect, but a lot of people are not going to read that article. They need to really make it a concerted public relations effort so that we can put the vapor canopy theory to bed.
I believe that's true.
And then finally, you conclude with challenges to all of us Christians.
Right. People like myself, I think it's just very important, first of all, number one, to know your scriptures, know what the Bible says. And we should be testing any theory of man, whether it's from Walt Brown or anybody else, against what the scripture says.
And so I want to thank you so much, Jane, for the great work you've done. Of course, I was biased to agree with your arguments because I support Walt Brown's hydroplate theory. But we do our best to be objective, and we give voice to the scientists who advocate other positions. They're always welcome here on Real Science Radio. So thank you, and I look forward to continue to work with you, Jane.
Thank you so much for this opportunity, Bob.
You're very welcome. So that's Jane Albright, who has written the series Noah's Flood, the Bible, the Science, and the Controversy, all available, the interviews and the article series online at rsr.org/Albright. That's Albright. And again, our video, and I'm so thankful Jane gave it such a thumbs up and a hearty recommendation. I think you'll love it. It's in three parts. It's Real Science Radio's Global Flood in the Hydroplate Theory. You can get that at our store. Just go to rsr.org, click on the store, then browse our science department, and you could get it in DVD, Blu-ray, as a download or stream. So it's available immediately right now, or you'll get it in the mail. So until next time, or until the Lord returns, for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio, this is Bob Enyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.